guys to date, Stella finally says, sounding sad. It always seems like they're taken by women who don't deserve them. Most of the time she wishes for a boyfriend more than I do, but at this very moment, I totally agree with her. The dating scene isn't that great right now. I put myself out there on the various apps, and the guys who swipe right on my profile don't really do it for me. I've been on a few recent dates, but meh. I'd rather be at home on a Friday night sharing a blanket with Stella and watching Kavinsky and Covey fall in love yet again. That never gets old. I know. I wish we could, too, I say, offering her a weak smile. But at least we have each other, right? I don't know what I would do without Stella in my life. She's my best friend, my homie. I count on her for a lot, maybe too much. Yeah, but you're not my type. I like them big and muscly, she laughs. And with a penis. Yeah, can't help you there, I say with a laugh. I prefer them to have a penis too. Four. It's the end of the work week and I'm feeling contemplative. Self-defeating thoughts run through my mind and cause me to worry, which is never good. For instance, sometimes I wonder if I'm settling with this job at Noteworthy. I mean, I basically work retail, which in many people's eyes kind of sucks. And while I love my job, and I think Iris is the most kick-ass boss ever, I do look around every once in a while at the end of the day and think, is this it? I'm only 25, almost 26, so I firmly believe it's okay if I don't know my life's calling yet. But there are people my age who are out there already conquering the world, starting their own businesses or studying to become doctors and lawyers. Those types of people make me feel woefully inadequate. I didn't even graduate college. Oh, I went to the local community college after I graduated high school, but I had to work full-time to survive, and I was a waitress back then at a crappy seafood restaurant on Fisherman's Wharf in Monterey. The tips were great most of the time, but it was hard work dealing with grumpy tourists. My boss was kind of a perv, and the hours were terrible. All late nights and weekends, which didn't give me a chance to have much of a social life. In high school, I was too busy partying and chasing after boys to worry about grades and getting into college, and I ended up screwing myself. I didn't make good life choices, and that was my own fault. Once all that went down, my mom was like, "Figure it out on your own, kid," and essentially gave me no advice. She didn't give me any money either, not that I expected her to. And my dad ditched our family a long time ago, so I have no idea where he's at. Not that I'd ask for his help anyway. So here I am, figuring it out on my own. Iris has mentioned she wants to retire someday, and she doesn't have any kids of her own. She's even hinted that she might want me to take over the business, but that sort of freaks me out, so I don't know. Am I up for the challenge? Would I be able to run this business and not run it into the ground? I know business in general isn't the best. The internet has taken a chunk of it, and the lease on the building is expensive considering its prime location, which Iris is constantly grumbling about. Plus, owning a business is so much responsibility. I'm not one for major responsibility. That sort of thing scares me. It's past four, which means I have less than an hour to go at Noteworthy, and Cassie is already here. She's the part-time sales associate who closes most weeknights, and I adore her. She's barely 20 and such a wide-eyed innocent sometimes. She reminds me of me when I was 20, when I firmly believed I could do no wrong and everyone I knew liked me. That was also before I started working with future brides, who will remind you real quick that they don't have to like you if they don't want to. The store phone rings and Cassie answers it, then puts it on mute to tell me, "It's for you, Caroline." "Thanks." I go to my desk and answer the call to find Tiffany on the other end.
"Carolyn, thank God you're there."
I don't bother correcting her on my name. Besides, she sounds completely frazzled.
"I'm checking to see if our Save the Day cards ended up shipping to the store."
"I had them shipped to your fiancé's house?" I remind her as I grab my iPad and bring up their order to double-check myself. "Yes, It states right here that they're shipping to Alex Wilder's address in Carmel.
They aren't here.
Now she sounds panicked, and maybe a little pissed, too.
You promised me they were supposed to arrive today.
Uh-oh. I don't like her choice of the word promise. I don't promise anything. I'm not that crazy. But why aren't they there? I know the basic times of UPS deliveries, and they should have arrived at his house by now. My heart starts to race. What if they don't arrive?
No.
They always show up. Always, always, always. Yes, they're supposed to arrive by the end of today. It's still early. I start, but she cuts me off.
No, not really. It's almost 5, and UPS is done delivering for the day in our area. I already checked.
Tiffany's stern voice tells me she's not messing around, and my stomach drops.
It's imperative those invitations arrive today. We plan on sending them out by the end of the weekend. The labels are already printed and ready to go. The only thing we're waiting on is the cards.
Shit. Did you check the shipping status? Hold on, let me do that. I copy the UPS tracking number and open up their site, pasting the number into the required box before hitting send. I'm sure they're going to arrive today. I've double and triple checked the order for the last few days, keeping track of every step. That's no lie. I knew this order was going to cut it close, so I made sure to stay on top of it.
Maybe you haven't checked enough, Carolyn.
Her snooty tone indicates she doesn't believe me, and I swear she gets my name wrong on purpose. The information starts to load on the website screen, and I tap my fingers against the edge of the iPad, nervous anticipation making my stomach twist. This is the one order I can't screw up, and I'm scared I already did. I know I made sure the cards were sent to the Wilder residence. Why would I have them sent here? Maybe she's not looking in the right spot around the house. Or maybe they went to his workplace? Though I don't know how that could happen.
Well, where are they?
Tiffany practically screeches after I'm silent for too long. I scan the information on the website, relief flooding me. They were sent here by accident. They delivered earlier today. Again, not sure how that got messed up, though it's happened before. Sometimes the home orders get thrown into the store orders, but it's not common. All that matters, though, is that someone has them, thank God.
And you didn't see them when they arrived?
I'm not the one who checks the deliveries. That's usually up to Iris or our stock guy, Jim.
Well, someone fell down on the job,
Tiffany says snottily.
Where exactly are they?
Most likely in our stock room.
Will you please go check and let me know right away?
Tiffany asks. Of course. I'll go check right now, I tell her.
Good. Call me back.
She ends the call before I can even say anything in reply. I head for our tiny stockroom, stopping short when I see the stack of boxes awaiting me. It's a Friday, and I know sometimes on Fridays, Iris has Jim do other stuff around the store. So then she sorts through all the boxes on Saturday when the store is fully staffed and she can spend her morning behind the scenes. Looks like I'm the one who's going to sort through all the boxes today. And I'm not dressed for it either, what with me wearing my white eyelet top I got on clearance at the end of last summer and trendy wide-leg jeans Stella gave me because she thought they looked weird on her. Not clothes I want to open a bunch of dusty boxes in. Doesn't matter how long those boxes have been sitting around, they are always, without a doubt, dusty and dirty. Ugh. After opening box after box and digging through their contents, I finally find the Save the Date cards, and I'm so freaking relieved. I give a little cry of joy when I spot them. I open the box with my trusty box cutter and check the cards, making sure the information is correct. All looks good, which means all is right with the world. Grabbing the box, I settle it on my hip and exit the stockroom, heading for my desk so I can call Tiffany back and let her know her cards are here. But she's not as enthused as I thought she might be when I make the call. And when I ask her how she wants to get the cards, she doesn't hesitate with her request.
Bring them to Alex's house.
she says. Right now? I glance at my phone for the time. It's almost 5, meaning I'm almost done for the weekend. I don't have any Saturday appointments this week, so I'm excited to actually have the day off for once.
Right now, Tiffany says firmly. It's the least you can do to make up for this major screw-up, Carolyn.
It's Caroline, I correct her, fed up with her yet again calling me by the wrong name.
I expect you within the hour, Caroline.
She ends the call before I can say another word, and I'm so annoyed I almost want to scream. Almost. I don't scream. Instead, I tell Cassie I'm leaving a little early to deliver something to a client, grab the heavy box of 300 save-the-date cards, and then call Stella to ask if I can borrow her car. Of course, Alexander Wilder lives on 17-mile drive. Though, at least his home is closer to the Carmel side, so I don't have to drive too deep in. But it's still quite the drive. And since it's a gorgeous, sunny, late Friday afternoon, the tourists are out in force, driving extra slow so they can check out the beautiful views of the ocean and all the gorgeous homes along the way. I've only been on 17-mile drive a few times, and I've lived in this area my entire life. But why would I want to go on a scenic route that costs money to drive? That's crazy talk, no matter how famous and beautiful it is. Plus, none of my friends lived up here. This area is way too fancy pants for my blood. The wealthiest person in my life is Stella, since her family makes a fortune with their cafe/bakery. But Stella loves a good sale like everyone else. She's the least fanciest fancy person I know. Signing. I restrain the temptation to lay on the horn, and instead, I hit the brakes, waiting for the car ahead of me to finish taking photos of the sprawling home on the edge of a cliff that overlooks the Pacific. I may have grown up in the Monterey Bay area, but I grew up in an older part of Monterey. Then before I started high school, we moved to Seaside, where the income levels are way lower and the ocean views are pretty much non-existent. This type of living was the stuff of dreams for me when I was a kid. The castle on the hill above the sea, the handsome rich prince who dwelled inside. Fantasy. All of it. Siri tells me I need to turn left in a mile, so I'm actually thankful for the slow tourists ahead of me, their speed helping me not miss my turnoff. I put on my blinker and turn onto the narrow road, my jaw dropping at the opulent houses that surround me. Though I can barely see them, what with all the tall gates and fences that protect the homes from curious onlookers. These homes aren't just for rich people. They belong to the top-level CEOs, billionaires, even old money. I spot the Wilder address and slowly pull into the driveway, rolling down my window so I can enter the gate code Tiffany texted me right before I left Noteworthy. She also texted me very specific instructions.
Please make sure you leave the box in the alcove to the right of the front door so no one can see it. Not that we have porch robbers in the neighborhood, but you can't be too safe. Thank you.
I was surprised by the thank you, but I'll take what I can get from her. The driveway is long and curvy, lined by thick redwoods that open up every once in a while to offer a teasing glimpse of the ocean. I keep my window rolled down, the scent of the sea washing over me. Mixed with the rich fragrance of the redwoods, and I breathe in deep, relishing the brief moment. What would it be like to live like this? To have an endless supply of money, to never have to worry about anything? The driveway ends in a circle directly in front of the house, which is freaking unbelievable. It's a split level, all lean angles and clean lines, and has so many freaking windows, it's almost as if the entire house is made of glass. I put the car in park and climb out, heading for the trunk to get the box of Save the Date cards. Before I grab it, I glance down at myself, noting the brown smudges on the front of my white shirt from carrying the box earlier. I try to brush them off, but it's no use. My shirt is kind of wrinkled, too. And my makeup is probably all sweated off from when I was tearing through the boxes in the stockroom. I'm sure I look like a wreck. Good thing I'm not seeing Alex today. Tucking my hair behind my right ear, I haul the box into my arms, somehow manage to shut the trunk with my elbow, and start my approach toward the vast front door. Correction, make that doors, since there are two. They're tall, at least 10 feet, maybe taller, incredibly imposing, and made of a solid wood that's stained a dark, rich brown. The color reminds me of the color of Alex's hair. Lord, woman, you need to stop with the Alex thoughts. I'm being ridiculous. I barely know him. I talked to him for only a couple of minutes, dealt with him at work, knew him when I was a kid. We shared a first kiss I put too much expectation on when I was young, yet I'm somehow drawn to him. It makes no sense. I mean, yes, he's good-looking. I understand that reason for being attracted to him. But why this weird fascination with him? I mean, he's engaged. We always want what we can't have. Isn't that the truth? Determination pushing me forward, I climb the 4 steps that lead to the front doors and spot the tiny alcove Tiffany mentioned in her text. I set the box down carefully, tucking it into the alcove as best as I can. Rising to my full and not so impressive height, I catch movement in the window closest to me. And like the curious person I've always been, I lean forward, trying to see what it was. Listen, I need to make something clear at this point. There aren't any coverings on the windows. No blinds, no curtains, nothing. So it shouldn't be surprising that I saw something. Or someone. And that I wanted to examine it further because, hello, I think if you were in the same situation, you would do the same damn thing. Am I right? So yeah. I lean forward, crane my neck to the right, and lo and behold, I see Tiffany standing in what looks like a living room wearing a pair of black lacy panties. And that's it. I shift away from the window, my heart racing. I wasn't supposed to see that. I'm being a creeper during an intimate moment, and that's kind of gross. I take a step back, ready to turn and hightail it out of there, but then I hear high-pitched laughter, accompanied by a man's voice saying something I can't quite make out. My curiosity comes back in full force, and yep, I'm creeping again, hoping for a glimpse of Alex Wilder without his shirt on, maybe? Please, no judgment. Unfortunately, Alex has his back to me, and it's an impressive one. Not that I'm surprised, all wide and muscly. Yes, I can see it in all its bare glory, considering he's wearing a pair of black lounge pants that rest low on his hips and nothing else. Tiffany is facing him, and while I can't see her entire face, I can see her mouth, and it's stretched wide with a smile. I'd smile like that at Alex, too, if I was alone with him shirtless, the lucky bee. He grabs hold of her waist, and she squeals again, louder this time. They kiss for a long time before he tosses her over his shoulder as if she weighs nothing, which she probably does since she's so skinny. Her long red hair covers her face, and she pummels his back with her fists, but it's a light-hearted protest. I can tell she's loving it. They turn, and I duck down, just the very top of my head peering through the window, right at eye level so I can still watch. They don't even notice me. They're too into each other. I hold my breath as they complete the turn, and now he's facing me. My gaze wanders up the half of stomach and chest that's on display. The other half is covered by Tiffany draped across him. And it's a nice view. He has a six-pack, muscles on muscles, and a very nice face. Wait a minute. I squint. Blink slowly 3 times. Shake my head a little. That's not Alexander Wilder. That's another man? I duck completely down so fast I fall on my ass on the cold concrete. My shaky fingers are covering my mouth and I sit there for a moment, horrified, trying to absorb what I just saw. No. It couldn't be a different guy. No freaking way. Without thought, I get back on my feet but remain in an uncomfortable crouch, peering over the edge of the window again to try to see them. But they're gone. What the shit?
What the shit? Tiffany is cheating on her future husband. Hi, Blackstone. I am leaving an alternate for page 39. The sentence starts with signing, but I think it's sighing. And I just want to give you an option. Here we go. Sighing. I restrain the temptation to lay on the horn, and instead I hit the brakes, waiting for the car ahead of me to finish taking photos of the sprawling home on the edge of a cliff that overlooks the Pacific. Five. I drive like a bat out of hell all the way back to my apartment, not even caring if Tiffany and the guy she's with heard me pull out of the driveway. I'm gonna guess they were too wrapped up in each other to notice much, considering they never heard me approach in the first place. My mind races the entire drive home, filled with scandalous thoughts I don't know how to deal with, like, Tiffany is a cheater. She's going to marry Alex in less than 2 months. Yet she's prancing around half naked with another guy. In Alex's house. While demanding I bring save-the-date wedding cards over ASAP? The absolute nerve of this chick is stunning. I mean, seriously. Luckily, I find parking not too terribly far from my place, and I hightail it down the sidewalk, bumping into tourists who are wandering along Ocean Avenue at a leisurely pace on a beautiful early spring evening. I envy their carefree lives, because my world has just been rocked. Rocked! I enter the apartment not 5 minutes later to find Stella barefoot in the kitchen, clad in jean shorts and a cropped white t-shirt, pouring tequila in the blender I found at a thrift store for $5. Oh my God, are you making margaritas? This is my greeting to her as I shut and then lock the front door. It's Margarita Friday, bitch. I'm bringing it back. She dumps in more tequila, puts the lid on the jar, and hits a button. The loud whirring of the blender drowning out all other sound. We had Margarita Fridays last summer, and they were the best thing ever. After the afternoon I just had, I need a serious drink. Stat. I drop my bag on the couch and go to my tiny bedroom where I strip out of my work clothes and put on a faded black t-shirt and a pair of black sweats I got at Victoria's Secret like 5 years ago. The word pink is spelled out in silver sequins across my butt. Obnoxious as hell, they're pants I'd never be caught in public in, but they're totally comfortable. Remember when we used to get all made up and go out on a Friday night? Stella says when I make my way back to the kitchen. She's already poured a drink for me and even added a straw to the glass. I grab it and start slurping it down, my eager drinking making her eyes widen. Easy there, partner. There's more where that came from. I do remember when we used to do that, I tell her after I swallow the cold, frothy goodness. We'd hang out at the bars downtown and pray someone would notice us. They would totally notice us, right? She sounds like she's questioning me. Sometimes. I shrug, take another drink. I can already feel the alcohol coursing through my veins, and I know it's not going to take much for me to get a little tipsy. I'm a total lightweight.
We'd also meet up with guys we connected with on dating sites, Stella reminds me after she's downed half her drink.
Yeah, those always went so well. I roll my eyes and make my way to our tiny pantry, where I know a brand new bag of tortilla chips is stashed. I rip the bag open and set it on the counter, then grab the salsa from the fridge.
Fiesta!
Stella exclaims as she takes a sip from her drink, her gaze snagging on mine. I must look crazed because she slowly sets her glass down and takes a step forward, resting her hand on my forearm.
Care, are you all right?
I settle my butt on one of our wobbly stools and exhale a shaky breath. You won't believe what happened to me. She sits across next to me on the other equally wobbly stool.
Tell me everything.
I do, not leaving one detail out. I mention the drive, the gorgeous house,
the mystery guy with Tiffany who has nice abs, and that she's with this guy in her fiancé's house, and whoops, he's not her fiancé.
So she's cheating on him,
she says when I finish. I pour the remaining contents from the blender jar into my nearly empty glass. Yes.
And you know for a fact the guy she was with wasn't Alex Wilder.
I saw his face, I tell her. It wasn't him. I'd remember that face.
I would too,
Stella says with a nod.
It was a good face.
The mystery guy has a good face too, don't get me wrong. He's very attractive, but he's not Alex.
And you're sure about that?
Stella, come on. Are you not believing me? I'm a little incredulous. She believes everything I say because, hello, I'm not a liar, and neither is she. We're best friends. We trust each other. She holds her hands up in the air like I'm going to arrest her.
Don't get mad. I just want to make sure that the man you saw really wasn't her fiancé, you know? Because what you're implying is a major accusation.
Trust me. I know. I sound miserable because I feel miserable about this entire situation. She's cheating on Alex Wilder. What did he do to deserve this? He seems like a nice guy. Back in the day, I thought he was a nice guy. Nice guys don't deserve to get cheated on.
You're going to have to tell him, you know, Stella says, pushing me out of my brain fog. Tell who? Alex Wilder. He has every right to know what his fiancé is doing.
I grab my glass and down the contents, like I literally drink every last drop of cold, slushy margarita before I slam the glass back onto the counter with a loud clang. I can't do that.
You have to, Caroline. He deserves to know. He's going to marry that cheating bitch in 3 months.
Less than 3 months, I point out. She shakes her head.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. What does matter is that she's cheating on him, and you saw it with your own eyes, and you have to tell him.
God, I wish I'd never peeked inside the window. I moan, staring at my empty glass with longing. I want more margaritas, please.
Eat some chips first. She shoves the bag in my direction. And don't get drunk over this. It's not worth it.
It's so worth it. I grab some chips and start munching. You're not the one who saw her prancing around with some strange dude only wearing panties.
Wait a minute. Stella frowns. The guy was wearing panties?
I start giggling. No. Tiffany was wearing the panties. The guy was wearing black pants, no shirt.
And she wasn't wearing a shirt either?
Right. I saw her boobs. They were really perky. Not too big, not too small. They're just right. I glance down at my chest, which isn't the perkiest, but only because I'm not blessed with a big chest. She had really big nipples, though. Stella giggles. Then I'm giggling again, and it eventually turns into uncontrollable laughter for at least 5 minutes, until finally Stella sobers up first, and she's watching me with concern in her eyes. You must tell him, Caroline. It's the right thing to do. Plus, you know him. You have history. He was Carter's friend. He deserves to know.
Does he really?
I drop my arms at my sides.
I don't really want to be the one to tell him. The conversation will be super awkward.
You know what's super awkward? Knowing those two are getting married and she's totally cheating on him. Now that is what I call awkward.
Stella slaps the edge of the counter, making me jump.
You have to be upfront with him. I know it won't be an easy conversation, but he needs to know the truth.
There is such a thing as minding your own business, you know, I remind her. As in, I mind my own business and pretend I never saw anything.
True. But do you want that guilt hanging above your head for the rest of your days? Knowing what you know, yet you didn't stop their wedding, and now he's married to a cheater?
Her explanation does make sense, but he flirted with me.
So what?
Stella grabs a chip from the bag, piles it with salsa, and shoves it into her mouth.
I don't know. It's kind of weird that he did that, don't you think?
He flirted with me about my cutting in line. He wanted a fast pass, remember?
He was so freaking attractive in that suit. The smile, his voice. Everything about him screamed sexy hot guy. Too bad it didn't scream sexy hot taken guy. Then I would have left him alone.
It was harmless flirting. Stella waves a hand, dismissing my words. Seriously, that was nothing.
He might be a cheater, too. I don't even like thinking of Tiffany as a cheater, though I saw it with my own two eyes.
A cheater would have not just flirted with you. He would have tried to get your number and ask you out. He didn't do any of that. Just made flirtatious conversation with you, asked about you after you were gone, and that was that. End of story. Stella explains, sounding perfectly logical.
But I hate the part that he asked about me. That shows interest, doesn't it? Though he was trying to figure out who I was since he recognized me. So yeah, I guess that doesn't matter. It was harmless flirting. He has a fiancé. A fiancé who is cheating on him. We need more margaritas. I tell Stella before grabbing the bottle of tequila. Like now.
Six. Alex. Hello. Did you have a good weekend? I pull Tiffany in for a quick embrace before I press a kiss to her cheek, and she quickly steps away from me, a faint smile curling her bright, pink-glossed lips. It was fine, though I missed you so much. She settles into the chair across from me and cracks open the menu. Her words don't quite ring true. It's the addition of so much that sounds false. I choose to ignore it. You know I wanted to be here. Work kept me in New York longer than expected. I'd originally planned on returning home Friday night, but an unexpected all-day meeting was called for Saturday, and by the time we finished, I was exhausted. So I flew home first thing Sunday morning, and now I'm back in California, tired and running on only a few hours' sleep, meeting my fiancé for brunch at my family's hotel near Pebble Beach. This was what she wanted, to make an appearance, to ensure everyone sees us together. I can't blame her. She staked her claim, and she wants everyone to know she's the fiancé of Alex Wilder. I sound bitter. Maybe I am. I feel like lately I've been working my ass off. I'm never around, and I have no idea what my fiancé is doing with all of her free time. When we first got together, I was in a lusty haze. I wanted her, she wanted me. We fucked like rabbits every time we were together. Now, that's not the case.
I know, Alex.
She doesn't look at me when she says it, her gaze too focused on the menu before her. I take the moment to study her, the long, wavy red hair, the flawless skin, the hint of cleavage peeking from the deep V of her dress. It's a tantalizing view, I can't deny it. Frowning, I try to recall the last time we had sex.
How was New York?
She asks, knocking me from my thoughts. Boring. She doesn't want to hear about the endless meetings, the discussions, and where we're taking the Wilder Hotel Corporation next. Well, there is one tiny bit of information she'll be interested in hearing. I'm going to Paris, I tell her. She lifts her head, her eyes widening the slightest bit.
When?
In a few weeks. We're hoping to acquire a property there.
A few weeks? But we still have so much to plan for the wedding.
Her voice drifts, her expression full of concern. You hired a wedding planner, correct? At her nod, I continue. Let her plan everything, and she can consult with you when needed. Tiffany sighs, irritation flickering in her golden brown eyes. We always tend to argue over the wedding plans.
You make it sound so easy.
It should be. We're paying her enough money to put this together. We're paying all of them enough money. I can't fucking believe how much a wedding costs. Not that I should be surprised. I see the invoices coming across my desk when we host charity galas at the hotel. The prices we're charged are astronomical. I'd secretly hoped with setting the wedding date so last minute, she might want to elope, or at the very least have a small wedding, but that didn't happen. Unfortunately. Tiffany deftly changes the subject.
When you go to Paris, will you be staying at the property in question?
I shake my head. No, it's closed. Actually, it's completely run down. Hasn't been in use for years, so if we do acquire it, we'd have to completely renovate the building. That sounds exciting, she says carefully. It is. It's the most excited I've felt about a project in a long time. You should come with me. Her eyes flash with surprise. I'm guessing she wasn't expecting that.
To Paris?
I nod, knowing my offer will please her. Lately, it feels as if nothing I do pleases her. From the start of our relationship, I'd warned her that my job, my duties to the family business, take up the majority of my time. She'd agreed not to be too demanding, reassured me she'd be perfectly happy with whatever time I could give her. But lately, it doesn't seem like it's enough. My mother even warned me about her after I first brought Tiffany to meet the family.
I don't think she cares about you in the way you want her to, she'd said,
a worried expression on her face, her fingers twisted in that long pearl necklace she loves to wear. I'd given my mother a kiss on the cheek. It'll be fine, I told her, which only seemed to make her even more worried.
I would love to go with you, Tiffany is beaming. I've never been to Paris before. I hear the shopping there is fabulous.
I'm sure it is.
The prices are less there for all the designer pieces. Chanel, Vuitton, Dior.
She presses her hands together in front of her mouth, almost as if she were praying.
Maybe we can finally find a ring for me.
I wince. I'm a terrible fiancé who hasn't given her an engagement ring yet, though my excuse is that the engagement only just happened, over a month ago. But still. My mother claims to have plenty of family diamond rings for me to choose from, though we haven't made the time to view them yet. That was the route I planned to take. Traditional. Keep it in the family. A ring passed down from generation to generation. But Tiffany has other ideas. She wants something extravagant and modern, sparkly and large. Very large, and brand new. No used diamonds for her. You know I want to give you a family ring. I resume reading the menu, hoping she doesn't argue. This is what we've gone round and round about lately, the ring. It's a touchy subject for both of us.
Alex.
I glance up at her surprisingly stern tone to find she's frowning at me, her pink lips pursed in a glossy pout. I stiffen, preparing myself for what she's about to say next.
I feel foolish telling everyone we're engaged, planning our wedding, yet I have no actual proof of the engagement.
You live in my house, I point out. How much more proof do you want?
You know what I mean.
She glances around before lowering her voice.
I want a ring on my finger as a sign of your commitment. It's been over a month since you asked me to marry you. How much longer am I going to have to wait?
I'll get together with my mother later this week, and I'll find a ring for you, I reassure her. The annoyance on her face is undeniable.
You know how I feel about taking one of your mother's rings?
It's not my mother's ring, it's a family ring, an heirloom, one that's been in our family for generations. I gently remind her. She shakes her head, her gaze growing distant.
I just don't know why you can't purchase me my own ring.
I don't understand why you can't see a family ring as having more meaning, I return, irritated. Enough of this. I don't want to talk about the ring anymore.
Of course you don't. It doesn't matter to you.
She snaps her menu shut and slaps it on the table.
I'm tired of you putting it off,
and I'm tired of you nagging me about it. Trying my best to smile, I reach across the table and take her hand, giving her fingers a squeeze. She blinks at me, her mouth formed into a pout, and I wish I would have just asked her to marry me with a ring already picked out. Come on, Tiff. Lighten up. We haven't seen each other in a few days. She gently withdraws her hand from mine.
We'll meet with your mother this week?
Yes, I say firmly, earning a faint smile. We remain quiet, me checking my phone while Tiffany rifles through the Fendi bag I purchased for her the last time I went to New York. My assistant picked it out for her, pulling out the shiny pink lip gloss and mirror so she can apply it right at the table. Did you send out the save-the-date cards yet? I thought those cards were a stupid waste of time and money, but Tiffany definitely did not.
I haven't got a chance to, no.
She nibbles on her freshly glossed lower lip, a move I used to find sexy. Now it just seems contrived. Why not? I ask. I thought that was your plan for this weekend, getting them ready to mail.
I became occupied with other things. There is truly so much involved when planning a wedding, Alex. I don't think you can comprehend exactly how much I'm dealing with at the moment.
I'm sure it's a lot. I reach across the table to take her hand again, but before I can grab it, she settles them both in her lap. Odd.
Though, thank goodness we have the location already.
She glances around the restaurant, taking it all in. We're getting married outdoors on the hotel grounds and holding our reception in one of the ballrooms on site.
That's such a huge relief.
You should send out those save-the-date cards before it gets too late. We're running out of time. I remind Tiffany before smiling at the server as she makes her approach.
Hello, Nina. Mr. Wilder, so good to see you again. Are you and Ms. Ratcliffe ready to order?
Nina asks, smiling at the both of us. Tiffany doesn't even bother to say hello. We'll both take the buffet, I tell Nina, not bothering to check if that's what Tiffany actually wants. Not that she'll protest. She goes along with everything I want, just as I do for her. Mostly.
Seven. Caroline. First thing Monday morning, and I'm at Noteworthy 20 minutes early, knowing full well Iris will already be there. The situation with Tiffany and Alex has been weighing on my mind all freaking weekend, to the point that I feel like I'm about to burst from the stress of it all. I need Iris's opinion. She'll know what to do. Caroline? She greets me when I find her in her office bent over her datebook. She frowns when I assume she sees the stressed-out expression on my face and closes the datebook, setting her silver pen beside it on the desk. You're here early. Are you all right, dear? No. I enter her office and sit in the seat opposite her desk. No, I'm not all right. There's something I need to discuss with you. I proceed to tell her everything I saw late Friday afternoon at the Wilder house. Iris's face grows more and more horrified the more details I add, especially when I mention that I saw Tiffany clad in a pair of panties and nothing else. Are you sure it wasn't her fiancé with her? Iris asks when I finish. She sounds just like Stella. It wasn't him, I say firmly. I know it wasn't. It was another man. Oh my. She shakes her head and sighs. This is quite the predicament. What should I do? Should I tell him? Should I go to her first and tell her I know? Warn her that if she doesn't tell him first, I will? That's a bit extreme, don't you think? Iris asks gently. Again, Stella said the same thing. Told me I watched too much reality TV, and no way in hell would Tiffany appreciate me threatening her like that. I had to run it by Iris, though, just in case she thought it was a good idea. Clearly it's not. If you were in this situation, what would you do? I ask. Iris grabs her silver pen, tapping it against the edge of her desk as she contemplates my question. I think I would tell him, she finally says. It would be a terrible conversation to have, and he most likely wouldn't believe you, and possibly even consider your behaving like a jealous shrew, but I would definitely tell him. Just so you're able to get rid of that guilty feeling I'm sure you're carrying around. Wait a minute. You believe he'd consider me a jealous shrew? I'm a bit taken aback at that statement. Why would he think that? Oh, absolutely he might think so. If he's madly in love with her and eager to make this woman his wife, do you really think he's going to believe the girl who ordered his invitations when she comes to him and says his future wife is cheating on him? Wow, you make me sound so menial. I'm a little hurt over it too, I can't lie. I do know him. Iris's brows rise. You do? How? He was my older brother's best friend when they were in middle school, I explain. He recognized me first. That was so long ago, though, wasn't it? Too many years have passed. He doesn't really know you, Iris says. I guess, I say with a shrug. I'm not trying to make you feel less than, Caroline. I'm just simplifying the situation as best I can from his perspective. I know and adore you, darling, but Alexander Wilder doesn't really know you at all, and he comes from a very powerful family in the area.
I'm sure he'd dismiss your sordid little tale as jealous gossip and carry on with his wedding as planned.
That's ridiculous. Would he really do that, even after everything I told him?
I know, I agree, but you have to realize that she'll surely convince him that you're lying.
I'm not, though.
We know this, Iris reassures me. They don't.
I don't want to be thought of as a liar. What if he tells his friends and colleagues that I lie? Convinces them that I'm some psycho who's hot for him and made up stories about his fiance. Then they tell their friends and so on and so forth until Noteworthy's business is ruined. Maybe I shouldn't tell him. I say tentatively, I don't want him or Tiffany spreading rumors about me or saying damaging things that could ruin the store's reputation.
He won't. I don't believe he'd take it that far. He doesn't have time for that, trust me. I know his father, though we haven't spoken in years. And if he's anything like his father, he's not the type to gossip. His father is a very private person. Tiffany, on the other hand, I'm not so sure about. I don't know her at all. Is she even from the area?
After I shake my head, Iris continues.
Well, if she's smart, she'll keep her mouth shut since she's the guilty party.
My mind is seriously spinning with all of this information that I want nothing to do with. This entire situation is so insane, I say, sounding a little dazed and confused. Maybe because I feel a little dazed and confused.
Isn't it? Oh, I haven't had this much commotion with a wedding since that one a few years ago, when the father of the bride brought a loaded shotgun to the ceremony and threatened his daughter's new husband with it.
Iris claps her hands together, the pleasure on her face unmistakable.
I do enjoy a little drama here now and then.
This is way too much drama for me, I mutter.
Yes, it is. Iris reaches across the table and clasps my hand with hers. But I know you can handle it.
My heart is beating so hard I swear it's going to pop out of my chest, and my palms are sweaty. But here I am, at Wilder Hotel on Pebble Beach, the most exclusive hotel in the area, sitting in the foyer of Alex Wilder's office and waiting for him to see me. That he even agreed to an appointment this afternoon is still a surprise. I figured he'd have no time to meet with me, or, at the very most, I'd probably see him next week. That would have been plenty of time for me to figure out how to approach this touchy situation and what to say.
But nope. When I made the call, his assistant put me on hold, then came back on the line and said he had a half-hour slot this afternoon available to meet with him at 2 o'clock, and that was it for the week. Iris had no problem with me leaving work early to meet with him either, damn it.
How I wish I'd had a 2 o'clock appointment too. But alas, my afternoon was completely free. So here I am, fidgeting in my seat, picking at my pink nail polish, a nervous habit I thought I broke myself of years ago. As I make the pink flakes continuously rain onto my knee, I realize the annoying habit is just as strong as ever.
Ms. Abbott?
I glance up to see his assistant smiling at me from where she sits behind her desk. She's absolutely stunning, with long, straight black hair that falls far beyond her shoulders and deep blue eyes rimmed with thick, black lashes. I wonder if he has certain criteria when hiring people who work for him.
I bet he does. I bet there's not one plain person who works at this hotel, or its offices either.
Mr. Wilder is ready to see you now. I rise to my feet, brushing away the pink flakes of polish from my black pants. I'm also wiping my sweaty palms on my pants, too, so it's like killing two birds with one nervous stone. Thank you. When I don't move, the assistant tilts her head, her delicate brows wrinkling.
His office is right there.
She indicates the closed door to her right with her hand. Okay. I take a deep breath. Exhale loudly. Thanks again,
You're welcome. She seems ready to say something else, but the phone rings, distracting her. Taking another deep breath, I approach the door, my fingers clasping around the handle, slipping a little before I can give it a turn. This causes me to fumble with the door, and I practically stumble my way into his office, gripping the edge of the door so I don't fall on my ass in front of him. Thank God I'm not wearing a skirt or a dress. When I right myself, I see Alex has risen from his chair and is rounding his desk, heading right for me. Next thing I know, he's standing in front of me, his hand touching mine, concern etched in his face.
Are you all right?
My cheeks are so hot. They surely must look like they're on fire. He reaches behind me with his other hand, so close I can feel his body heat, inhale the scent of his spicy cologne as he shuts the office door. Sorry. I guess your door handle is giving me a hard time. I wave a hand like it's no big deal, causing his hand to fall away from mine. My cheeks are still warm, and I'm sure I look flustered. I know I certainly feel flustered. His lips tip up at the corners, a barely there smile that is still dazzling, damn him. Why does he have to be so extraordinarily good looking? It's the most annoying thing ever. He's not wearing a suit today, though I see the jacket hanging on a nearby coat rack. His trousers are navy blue. He's wearing a crisp white shirt with the sleeves rolled up to reveal thick tanned forearms. A silver tie hangs loose around his neck. His dark hair is a little mussed. Looks like he might be having a rough day. I'm afraid I'm about to make it even rougher.
Eight. Alex. There's something about Caroline Abbott that always appealed to me, even when I was a kid. Especially when I was a kid. In middle school, I was painfully shy. Insecure about how I looked, insecure around girls. I didn't know how to talk to them, even though I have a sister, and my little sister was more popular than I was at that time. Caroline was always nice to me. I thought she was funny and sweet. Carter gave her endless shit, but I always hung back, didn't want her to think I was giving her shit too. After a while, I developed a little crush on her. Even though she was in the sixth grade and I was in the eighth, I was drawn to her. To the point that one summer night, while hiding out together in a neighborhood game of hide-and-seek, the darkness made me bold, and I kissed her. She kissed me back. We kept kissing each other until someone banged on the side of the shed. The noise startled us. We sprang apart from each other, and that was it. We never kissed again. Hell, we never saw each other again. My grandfather told my parents they were finished playing at being regular people and living in a normal neighborhood in Monterey. He wanted them closer. He wanted our family to move to Carmel, even though we weren't that far, and he wanted us kids in the best schools in the area. So we moved. I never saw the Abbotts again. Until now. I thought of her off and on throughout the years. Where was she? Did she grow up to be a beautiful woman? Did she even still live in the same area? Does she still remember our kiss with fondness? Or is it a bad memory she'd rather forget? I could ask her, but now is not the time. Currently, she's standing before me with bright red cheeks and a vaguely frazzled air about her, her shirt wrinkled, and there are odd flakes of pink dusting her black pants. She's reminding me of how she was all those years ago. A little bit of a mess. A pretty one. If Carter ever knew I liked her when we were kids, he would have made fun of me for days, weeks, probably months, if not years. But she was cute back then, and funny. She had a way of talking that I found interesting, and I liked the same TV shows she watched. Sometimes we'd all sit together in their living room and watch TV, and I liked those moments. They felt so normal. She'd grown up to be a beautiful woman, there's no denying that. Sleek brown hair that's parted in the middle and stops just above her shoulders. Dark brown eyes that flash with curiosity as her gaze wanders about my office. She has sharp cheekbones and a sharp nose, lush lips, and a pointy little chin, smooth skin, and a lean body. She reminds me of a cat, if a cat came in human form.
I'm sorry to bother you at the last minute like this, she says, her gaze looking everywhere but never meeting mine. She seems terribly nervous. Do I make her nervous? I tend to do that to people, but usually only when I'm trying to close a business deal and I'm playing hardball. Or is she nervous because of our shared past? Should I bring it up? Should I bring up the kiss? If I do, and she doesn't remember it, then I look like a freak fixated on a moment that happened over 10 years ago. Closer to 14 years ago. And while she was my first kiss, and I have a feeling I was hers, it's not normal to be hung up on someone you kissed when you were 14. Especially when I'm engaged to be married to someone else. I realize she said something and I never answered her. Jesus. It's not a problem. Would you care to sit down? I have exactly 30 minutes to speak with her, which is a damn shame. I wouldn't mind catching up, maybe even over a drink. Yeah, that's probably not a good idea. Sure. She settles into the chair opposite my desk while I sit, leaning back to take her in. She's fidgety, still not really looking at me. What exactly brings you here to my office, Miss... My voice drifts because it feels strange to call her Miss Abbott. I still think of her as Caroline, or Carrie. That's what her mother called her. Abbott, Caroline finishes for me. Caroline Abbott, you do remember I'm from Noteworthy, right? Of course. I'm a little offended that she'd think I actually forgot who she was. I know who you are, Caroline. I was going to call you Miss Abbott, but that felt strange, what with me knowing you when you were 12 and your hair was always in braids. She's frowning, her delicate brows wrinkled. It's a cute look, I have to admit. Braids? That's what you remember about me? I remember lots of things about you, I tell her, and from the look on her face, I just shocked her silent. Good. I need to cut to the chase, not dwell on the past. Having her in my office is too tempting. I shouldn't be tempted. Is there a problem with our invitation order? The payment? We all know the only part I played in the order is that my credit card paid for everything. Her nervousness is long gone. She is all business.
No, there was no problem. Well,
she bites her lower lip, and while I find the move contrived from Tiffany, when Caroline does it, I find it intriguing. I vaguely even remember what that mouth tasted like. Sunshine and strawberries. She used the strawberry lip balm that was so fragrant. I always knew when she slicked it on her lips. I've had a fondness for strawberry-scented anything ever since. Well? I prompt when she remains silent. She sighs and shakes her head, her hair swinging gently, sleek and shiny.
This is so hard for me to discuss. I'm sorry. Let me start from the beginning. Your fiancé called me Friday afternoon saying she hadn't received the Save the Date cards.
Right? And they were supposed to be delivered on Friday afternoon. Irritation flashes through me at the idea of that not happening. I paid a fortune in shipping fees to ensure we'd get those stupid cards by the end of the week. She was so damn insistent we'd get them by Friday, yet she didn't bother addressing and stamping any of those cards over the weekend. The delivery fee I paid turned out to be a waste of money.
They were delivered Friday afternoon. They were just somehow delivered to the store and not your house. So your fiancé requested that I bring them to your home.
She takes another shaky breath. What happened? Were they the wrong cards after all? I know Tiffany didn't send them out yet. She told me, I say.
You've seen Tiffany?
She looks surprised. I was with her this weekend. Yes, I say with a frown. Caroline shrugs.
I just figured you were out of town this weekend.
How would she know that? I was. I returned from New York early Sunday.
Oh.
I lean forward in my chair, resting my arms on my desk, impatience making me fidget. An old habit my father drove out of me when I was younger. What happened with the Save the Date cards, Caroline? She jumps a little in her seat, and I immediately feel like an asshole. Did I yell at her? I don't think I did, but I need her to get to the point. The clock is ticking and I have a conference call in less than an hour.
I'm sorry. Like I said, this is extremely difficult for me to say. Okay.
She takes a deep breath, pursing her lips to exhale, and I can't help but study those lips,
They're not over-glossed, and I like that. I like it a lot.
When I went to your house to deliver the cards, I saw something.
She's quiet, her head bent. I notice that she's absently picking at her nail polish, and it's pink. What exactly did you see? I ask.
Tiffany.
She hesitates, her gaze lifting to mine.
Half naked.
Another hesitation.
With another man. Who was also half naked.
I sit there in stunned silence, blinking at her, trying to comprehend what she just told me. You saw my fiancé with another man? Caroline nods, her expression pained, her cheeks still pink. This is incredibly embarrassing for her, I assume. It's also rather embarrassing for me. On Friday afternoon, she nods again. I was gone, in New York, working my ass off while Tiffany was being unfaithful. And here I was like an idiot, beating myself up over my interest in Caroline. Seeing her stirred up old memories, that was all. I certainly didn't act on those past feelings,